Mail-in ballots and electoral fraud. We're all thinking about what's going on in America at this moment, but there have been precedents. On the 22nd of May 2016, presidential elections were held in Austria, which resulted in the Freedom Party of Austria, the FPÖ, bringing a 152-page appeal to the Constitutional Court. The case claimed that over 500,000 ballots were invalid. Now, for your information, the blue indicates where the Freedom Party won, and the green represents where the Socialist Party won. And the Socialist Party was given the election as a result of these mail-in ballots. Non-citizens and minors had been allowed to vote, and irregularities, particularly with absentee ballots, significantly affected the outcome. And since the Freedom Party presidential candidate, Norbert Hofer, the one behind, lost to Socialist van der Bellen, the man in front here, by a mere 30,863 votes, the court found that more than twice that number had been affected by breaches in the electoral code. And the Constitutional Court of Austria ordered that the presidential election second round be held again. And the court statement declared, it is completely clear to the Constitutional Court that laws regulating an election must be rigorously applied. This must rule out abuse and manipulations. Voter fraud and election rigging is notoriously prevalent throughout Africa. But for some reason, people in America often seem skeptical and naive about fraud in their own elections. Now, I could give you no end of examples in Africa. Let's just take 1990, Namibia elections. DTA, Democratic Turnout Alliance, was winning overwhelmingly, winning across the board, sweeping across the board. And then there was a power failure. And after the power failure, all the ballots were just for SWAPO. That happened. Shortly after the election results were announced, 57% for SWAPO, who claimed to speak for everyone in Namibia, but anyway, they were very happy to at least win. And it was discovered afterwards that there were massive containers of unopened, uncounted ballots. And the United Nations officials who had ensured the free and fair election ordered that these unopened ballots discovered on a dump outside Windhoek all be thrown into the incinerator and burned, because the results could upset what they'd already declared to be a free and fair election. Now, what I've just said is public knowledge. It's not a conspiracy theory. That was published, known information. After the South African elections in 1994, when 104% of the electorate voted, which is a world record, they discovered whole container loads of unopened ballots, which also were just incinerated. But it gets more interesting than that. Do you know that the IEC, the so-called Independent Electoral Commission, was taking so long to count the election results that after the first few days after elections, it was projected by the press that it would take at least 4 years for the election results to come out at the present rate it was taking. And so at a certain point, the IEC commissioner admitted, we just stopped counting. We extrapolated the percentages and we did some horse trading. So I don't know if you know it, but it is a documented fact, unquestioned, that in the 1994 election, the vast majority of votes were never counted. They never got round to it. They'd invited everyone from Hillary Clinton to Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, Yasser Arafat. They were all coming for Nelson Mandela's coronation, beatification, elevation, ordination, whatever it was. And they're all coming to worship. And it was just inconvenient that they couldn't count the votes in time. So they just said, we extrapolated percentages and did horse trading. So if you thought every vote was counted in South Africa's first democratic election, where every one man, one vote, every vote, they didn't even count half the votes. They didn't even count a quarter of the votes. They extrapolated the percentages and they did some horse trading, according to the chairman of the IEC. Now, I don't think you'll see that mentioned in our school textbooks, but that's the fact. But for some reason, Americans seem to think, well, fraud happens in other people's countries. It never happens in our elections. But the Heritage Foundation found more than 1,000 instances of documented voter fraud in the United States just over the last 20 years. That's documented. Where it's been proven, 1,088 cases with 949 criminal convictions and 48 civil penalties. The New York Post published this year, 29th of August, 2020, Confessions of a Voter Fraud. I was a master at fixing mail-in ballots. This was written by John Levine. He was the reporter. The whistleblower, who remains anonymous, is described, he described himself as a political insider, a Bernie Sanders Democrat diehard, and he revealed there's no race in New Jersey, from city council to United States Senate, that we have not worked on. This operative declared that voter fraud with mail-in ballots is no myth. He knows this because he's been doing it on a grand scale for decades. The whistleblower, whose identity and rap sheet and long history working as a consultant to various campaigners, was confirmed by the Post, and they claimed that he not only changed ballots himself, but he led teams of fraudsters, and he mentored at least 20 operatives in New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, a major swing state which is in the news right now. He and his operatives fanned out going from house to house, convincing voters to let them mail completed ballots on their behalf as a public service. They would then take the sealed envelopes home, hold them over boiling water to loosen the glue, remove the real ballot, place the counterfeit ballot inside a signed envelope, certificate, and reseal envelope. In America, the real certification is the envelope. The ballot inside is easy to duplicate, and there's no identity of the person on the ballot. The identity is on the envelope. The envelope is the real certifying element, and that's what they needed. He reported that sometimes postal employees were in on the scam and filled out ballots which came from Republican strongholds, which were thrown into the garbage. Industrial scales, vast amounts. In 2017, hundreds of mail-in ballots in New York City, which never arrived at the Board of Elections, were discovered as these baskets of 2016 mail were put to one side of the Brooklyn processing facility until the election was over. It was published, known, no question about it. Mail-in fraudsters particularly target assisted living facilities, he revealed, by helping the elderly fill out absentee ballots. Some people might have shaking hands. Some people might have impaired eyesight. They want help. And here's this kind man coming to help them. And nursing homes are a gold mine for votes, he said, as are the inactive voters or the deceased voters. I've seen bumper stickers in America. My grandfather always voted Republican until he died. Since then, he's voted Democrat every time. Democrats would also routinely buy votes from the homeless shelters, literally paying people to register and vote the way they dictated. Organizationally, this whistleblower said that their voter fraud schemes resembled mafia organizations, with a campaign manager controlling the fraudsters to harvest voter details and stuff ballot boxes, and they had quotas to work on and goals to achieve. He noted that the active candidate would be kept in the dark so that he could maintain plausible deniability. Very important that the candidate himself does not know what's going on. Various states sent out an unprecedented 80 million unsolicited ballots to voters in the mail in 2020. This has never been done in the history of the world. Forget about America. Unsolicited ballots sent, and people move. And this means people coming to post boxes and someone's moved you. People were getting multiple ballots for the same person, for deceased relatives. All sorts of irregularities were going on. And that's just what people have reported. The claims of voter fraud from across America are colossal. And if you want to get a bit of documentation on it, most of what goes on out there gets deleted. But one place I found is you go onto Donald J. Trump Facebook page, which has grown from 31 million supporters just a week ago to 32 million, literally in under a week, I've noticed. And on there, he puts a whole lot of news of people testifying, people showing different news reports. And very interesting, people like Starr, what was his name? The top...
Ken Starr.
Kenstar, a top-level prosecutor who dealt with Clinton, for example, and Mayor Giuliani, who was the public attorney, was it, a prosecutor in New York. He said he has never in his life seen such colossal fraud, such systematic, widespread fraud as he's seen in Pennsylvania in this recent election. But there's a lot of details coming out there of the fraud that's going on, and it's huge. They've come across computer glitches, which just routinely switched 3,000, 5,000, 6,000 votes from Trump supporters to Bernie Sanders supporters and so on. And hundreds of thousands of votes have been found to be flipped around the country. And interestingly, I don't know how many of you know of this, but two of the top Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and Feinstein, these are two top Democrat women, they have massive, colossal shareholding in a Dominion voting, which actually provides a software for a lot of this electronic voting around the country. Now, how is that for conflict of interests? And so there's a lot of irregularities. To call it irregularities is, in fact, an insult to irregularities, because we're talking about millions, tens of millions of ballots that are flying around there, who knows what or where. And Lieutenant General Tom McEnery explained, and I listened to a full-on radio program last night while I was putting this together, just listening in the background, to how this general explained about, have you heard about scorecard and hammer, or hammer and scorecard? And this general explained that the CIA organized this, and there's several people speaking about this, like National Security Agency analysts. Now, I tried to find a picture of hammer and scorecard, and the only image that came up was this one, which has got a Snopes false put over it. But knowing how Snopes is, they're a bunch of fake news people themselves. They're following Satan, the first fact checker. Did God really say? You know, Satan in the garden was the first fact checker. Fact checkers are fact selectors, or fact deniers, or fact deleters. Fact censors is a better term. But hammer and scorecard is a deception operation organized by the CIA, which is untrackable, which goes into the software, and which is able to guarantee an outcome so that it will do it so randomly, but make sure that their candidate gets over 50%, their chosen candidate. And so that no matter what the people voted, this has a software program that will come, and it's called Hammer and Scorecard. That's the program, and this is a CIA deception operation that has been uncovered. This dates back to the Obama years. And the moment this comes out, you've got the cyber bullies, you've got the thought police, you've got Snopes and all these other... Amazing, you can post something, and within seconds, their fact checkers, they're and deleting or putting something over, or putting like over that image I've just shown, false, or it doesn't have all the context, and so on and so forth. So, interesting. If only they could be that vigorous in dealing with things like pornography. But no. Dealing with people who want to go against the politically correct narrative in the media right now, whether it's about something to do with the COVID-19 pandemic or lockdown. And so what's going on right now is a scam of gigantic proportions. And you don't have to quote me on this. We just take people like Giuliani or Starr saying this is the most systematic, widespread, colossal fraud ever seen in history. It's just staggering. And you know this from a whole lot of things. Now, just consider how you've had a candidate now on the Democratic side who has done nothing. He's been hiding in his basement. He has not managed to gather a couple of hundred people collectively at rallies for the last few months. He's been doing virtually nothing, and when he does talk, it's often incomprehensible. But he smiles a lot. And then you've got a president with a phenomenal track record who's been out there gathering vast amounts of people, and the general said, isn't this strange? Why was it that the Democratic candidate felt no pressure to get out and do much work for the vote? They were confident, they knew they had the vote. They were depending on mass media, the mass media who was only giving their case and was concealing the scandals about Biden, his son, and others, and all the different dirty dealings on the go and the laptop and all these things, Ukraine and so on. And they were continually pushing a narrative that promoted the cause. According to one expert on big tech who was interviewed by Tucker Carlson on Fox News, he said it's worth at least 15 million votes for the Democrat side, the free advertising and promotion and PR they've been given in the mass media in America, CNN, NBC, CBS, and so on. And extraordinarily, they were so confident that they could win. Now, interestingly, the absentee ballots keep coming in. And even after the time has ended, Joseph Stalin said it's not the people who vote that counts, it's the people who count the votes. That has never been more true than in the 2020 election in America. It's not the people who vote that counts, it's the one who counts the votes. And so, basically, the election fraud is what Biden's campaign has been trying, but it seems that Donald Trump had lawsuit counterpunch, and he's going for counterpunch. Now, at the moment, you can see a lot of the media are going hysterical on president-elect, president-waiting, and so on and so forth, but it's not the media's role to announce who wins the election. It's never the media's role to announce the election. And the entire mass media is completely against Donald Trump. This is just the way it goes right now. But he's got the law on his side. And you know how it works in America is this. The elections are not decided by the media. And although if you've got a landslide, the media's predictions can be exactly what happens. But in this case where it's tight, they can't be that sure. For example, do you remember 20 years ago, Al Gore was contesting against, and he was the vice president coming out of the Clinton era, George W. Bush. We didn't know for 36 days after the election who had won the election, because they were recounting in just one area in Florida. But that was the swing state, and that held it up. And for 36 days, nobody knew. But at that stage, you didn't have the media announcing and being that sure and demanding and so on. But what you've got right now is, do you remember what Hillary Clinton said early on publicly? No matter what, Biden mustn't concede under any circumstances. And the reason is this. According to American law, you haven't decided the election until December, when the electors sent from each state, who should be representing what the results were in their state, come to the College of Electors, and then that determines who's going to be present. Now, what happens if it's either even or a dead tie, which can happen, or if it's contested and uncertain, lawsuits and so on? In that case, it goes to the House of Representatives for a vote. And the House of Representatives votes on who becomes the president. Now, you may say, well, that doesn't sound good because the House of Representatives is overwhelmingly Democrat or majority, but it doesn't work that way. The way it works is in the event of a contested election where the sitting president, for example, refuses to concede or where there's serious allegations of misdoing, the election results are put to one side and it's a straight vote to the House of Representatives. That's the Constitution of America, but they don't vote each representative. They vote per state. Every state gets one vote. Now, while there's more people in the blue states, so-called the Democrat states, there's vastly more red states or Republican states. So it would be a dead winner for the Republicans if it was contested all the way up to the day before they must decide who is going to be the president sworn in on the 21st of January. It's up to a majority of the states to decide with an election. And that would be a shoo-in for Donald Trump, unless there's treachery on the Republican side. Now, it's interesting that Karl Marx said, accuse your enemy of what you're doing as you're doing it to create confusion. I saw this in Rwanda. The government who had architected, trained, prepared, and was carrying out the genocide was calling for foreign aid for the victims of the war. You know, this is typical. You get the people who are doing the crime accusing other people and making themselves the victims and villainizing the people they're attacking. Being politically correct is like taking a test where you're given all the answers. Neither one requires you to think. You know, chant this, whatever the slogan is you've got to chant, say this, do that, and so on. Well, that's fairly brainless. There are a number of books that have expressed the great concern that we are losing our freedom of speech. We've got language police, we've got thought police, we've got politically correct bedtime stories, we've got ending of discussion and silencing and how the left is killing free speech, how people are being muzzled, and it's outrageous. It's very serious. Truth is the new hate speech. Political correctness is destroying the very fabric of society. Even in the year 2000, 20 years ago, you could have a contested election and the debate was still fairly polite. People weren't burning things in the streets or going berserk or accusing others of... Right now, I've got Kamala Harris saying we need to set up Nuremberg trials for everyone who's ever supported Trump and make sure they never get employed again, that they can't be employed and things like this, and have lists of everyone who supported Trump. And even who's, forget who worked for Trump, people who voted for him should be boycotted and banned. And so the mentality. Hate speech is just free speech, which the liberals don't like. A hate crime requires thought police. George Orwell called it in his book 1984. Agenda 2 told us about this years ago already, the masters of deceit, how the left are working for deceit. And understand this problem that we've got right now, it goes back to education, just as is pointed out in Masters of Deceit, because the issue is never the issue, the issue is the revolution. And the problem we've got now is there's a generation of people who've been brought up to think the end justifies the means. Lying's acceptable, stealing's acceptable, fraud's acceptable, because the end justifies the means. And our end, a socialist utopia, is so noble that it doesn't matter how many people's lives we destroy, how many laws we break, because there's no God, there's no heaven, there's no hell, there's no right, there's no wrong, there's just the revolution, and there's the party, and there's the issue. And that's all that matters. And the end justifies the means. And so they don't even feel guilty for lying, stealing, and cheating. Because that's the product of education that has been coming up out of the John Dewey type schools. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. That is the problem we're dealing with. At its very core, this is an education issue. You may be aghast that so many people vote for pro-abortion characters who want to kill babies and pervert society and teach pornography to kids in primary school. But where does it come from? Lack of knowledge. It's a failure of evangelism and education discipleship at its basis. And when it comes to unjustly influencing elections, the Barack Hussein Obama-Biden administration, remember Biden was the vice president under Obama and shared in his crimes, they sabotaged the re-election prospects of Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan in 2015. This was the fifth election to be held since the end of military rule in 1999. And the elections were first scheduled for 14 February 2015, but this had to be postponed by 6 weeks to 28 March due to instability caused by the Boko Haram terrorists. Now, in Nigeria, the kidnapping of hundreds of schoolgirls by Boko Haram precipitated a national crisis. And former United States Congressman Steve Stockman, a member of the U.S. congressional delegation, sent to Nigeria in the months after the kidnapping of these hundreds of schoolgirls by Boko Haram, he confirmed that a senior United States general informed them that they had intelligence, hard military intelligence, that could have aided the military in Nigeria to crush the Boko Haram terrorist group, but they were blocked from providing this information, this time-sensitive intel, to the Nigerian authorities. They were blocked by the Obama administration. The reason given for the refusal of critical intelligence that could have made all the difference in the war against terrorism was Nigeria's pro-family stance. which resisted the same-sex marriage demands of the Obama administration. Remember, Obama had come on his Africa tour 2013. His main message was the gospel of gay marriage. And this is what he preached from one side of Africa to the other. And he was well answered by, for example, a Kenyan president who said, people who've ruined their own country should not presume to come here and tell us the way forward. And this Kenyan president put it even stronger and said, it's inhuman, it's unchristian, it's un-African, it's uncivilized, we won't tolerate it, we won't accept it, we'll never allow it. And so Obama's message went down like a lead balloon in Nigeria as well. And so because they weren't responding to his message of we've got to have LGBTQ, gender confusion, gay perversion, call it marriage and all that sort of thing, he told his military, don't help them with returning the girls or defeating Boko Haram. How petty can you get? So as a result of the deteriorating security situation in northern Nigeria, and what voters saw as the failure of Goodluck Jonathan's presidency to defeat Boko Haram and return the girls, the incumbent lost the 2015 elections. And the previous military dictator, Muhammadu Buhari, was elected in a highly contested election. The voter turnout was a record low, 43%, that's all. And the election marked the first time an incumbent president had lost a re-election in Nigeria, because the message was, no rescue, no vote, bring back our girls. This was the theme all throughout Nigeria. You can't bring back the girls, we won't even vote. And so the Christians stayed away from the polls by millions, and the Muslims won the election. First time that a previous military dictator won an election after having been ousted. This is against all common sense. I mean, why would anyone elect a military dictator who'd had to be forced out of his dictatorship and they vote for him again? Our friends in Nigeria inform us that most people who voted for Muhammadu Buhari did so because Jonathan's administration, the Christian administration, had failed to curb Boko Haram's insurgency, but Buhari had promised to end it decisively. There is suspicion that the Muslim terrorists and the Muslim presidential candidate have been working towards a similar goal of removing Christians from power in Africa's most populous nation. Remember, Nigeria is the largest nation in Africa. It might be the biggest in terms of territory, but the largest in terms of population. Nigerians have expressed their frustration that American interference and blind promotion of perversion sabotaged attempts to free the kidnapped girls from Boko Haram. So literally, the gay agenda of Biden and Obama served the cause of Islamic Jihad in Nigeria. If you're talking about rigging elections, it undermined the Nigerian military's attempts to defeat the jihadists, and now it has brought about a catastrophic return to rule by a Muslim who used to be the military dictator of the country. While they promised them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. 2 Peter 2:19 could be written over all these characters. Speaking of which, old Obama bowed before the Saudi Arabian king, pandered to Muslim jihadists, did everything he could to help enemies of the gospel who persecute the church. And Hillary Clinton, when Secretary of State, called the Muslim Brotherhood a force for peace and moderation and stability in the Middle East. Which reminds us of Jimmy Carter's policy back in the 1970s of betraying America's ally, the Shah of Iran, into the hands of the Ayatollah. And when people were saying in America that Obama was the worst president in American history, I said, it may turn out to be so, but consider the damage done by Jimmy Carter. 13 countries betrayed to communism in his 4 years in presidency, and Iran to the Ayatollah. And that hasn't ended yet. Zimbabwe isn't free yet. And as I said that, I was tapped on the shoulder by David Noble, who said, Peter, you're wrong. The worst president in America's history, in terms of damage done, has got to be Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He betrayed one-third of the world's population in the hands of Soviet communism. And from the back of the hall, somebody shouted out, but it all started with Abraham Lincoln. And I thought, yep, you could have a contest. Who's the worst president in American history? But Jimmy Carter and Obama, certainly the worst in my lifetime. But I think a Biden presidency, if it ever happens, God forbid, would be pretty bad. This should also be an opportune time to remind Americans that Vice President Joe Biden confirmed the Obama White House armed and funded ISIS, Islamic State. This is quoting from Alex Newman, published in 2014 in the New American. Obama's anti-ISIS coalition built ISIS, Biden admits. Now, he did this at the Harvard University Institute of Politics, John F. Kennedy Institute. In the Herald, published in October 2014, under the title Biden's Admission, U.S. Allies Armed ISIS, Patrick Martin wrote, ISIS is essentially the creation of the United States and its allies who fomented civil war in Syria against the government of President Bashar al-Assad. Now, if this makes no sense to you, let me tell you, this has caused such ripple effects, it affects all of us. Speaking to students at Harvard's John F. Kennedy Forum, U.S. Vice President Joseph Biden revealed some of the dirty secrets of the U.S.-led war against Syria that American allies poured hundreds of millions of dollars and tens of thousands of tons of weapons into anyone who'd fight Assad. And Stevens, who became Ambassador Stevens, was murdered by the same jihadist he had funded in Benghazi in 2013. He took the first $500 million to ISIS and got them started. The U.S. admits that it accidentally airdropped weapons and supplies to ISIS during the war in Syria and also accidentally funded and trained them. Syria has got the largest collection of Christians in the Middle East outside of Egypt. 6% of the population of Syria are Christians, which is very large for the Middle East. And Assad, who has been demonized by the Western media, is a friend of the church. Christian leaders regularly come to visit Assad, and they find him very responsive to their needs. Missionary friends of mine in Syria say he is the only hope for the people politically, because they know he's the only one who stands between them and getting beheaded by ISIS. And so in a church in Syria, you'll see a lot of Christian men sitting in military uniforms, because a disproportionately large amount of Christians in Syria are in the army. Because Syria is a secular government that protects the Christians from religious extremists like Muslim Brotherhood, and therefore they are fiercely loyal to Assad's government. And President Assad goes to visit the churches and supports them, especially on Easter and on Christmas. And you'll see Christians marching with pictures of this man who's been demonized in our media. But this is what Damascus looked like before Obama started the Arab Spring revolutions. This is what their streets look like. I mean, this looks good. This looks better than some of our streets. Syria before the war, Syria on its way to democracy and freedom below, thanks to Obama and Biden. Bashar al-Assad, and if you haven't heard him speak, he speaks well in English. He's trained in England. He's a medical doctor. You should Google and hear him or his wife's very rational, sane, balanced, logical, common sense speeches. The West deals with terrorism in a hypocritical way, he said. They call it terrorism when it hits them, and revolution, freedom, democracy, and human rights when it hits us. This is ISIS at work, funded by the United States of America under Biden and Obama, destroying churches. This church was destroyed by ISIS. And so who backs ISIS? Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, Israel, United Kingdom and France, and the United States of America. ISIS, the worst terrorist movement to hit the church in the Middle East, started by mostly Western or most favored nation status allies of America. And it's not just a cartoon, it's a fact. America gave hundreds of millions and ultimately billions of dollars, not just in money, but in weapons, to ISIS, who destroyed entire villages of Christians. So these kind of memes are quite accurate. If you don't come to democracy, democracy will come to you. Nothing says democracy better than bombs coming down on you. Democracy, coming soon to a neighborhood near you. Under Obama, drone attacks, remote attacks, assassinating people increased exponentially. I think he increased drone attacks something off the charts into the thousands of percent. He must have authorized something in the region of 14,000 drone attacks, which killed tens of thousands of people, most of whom were collateral damage, civilians who were not the targets, caught up in this. and he gets a peace prize. And this is what Syria looks like after he's been busy with them supporting ISIS. So above you can see democracy at work, Obama in his security, and over here you can see Assad. This is dictatorship. We told the West it should not support terrorism and give it political cover because it would affect your countries and your people. They didn't listen to us. Terrorism is like a cancer. When you deal with the consequences rather than the root cause, it'll only spread faster. So this is a picture of Serena Shim, an American journalist in Syria, who exposed that the Turkish government, who's a member of NATO, was aiding ISIS on live TV, and two days later she was killed in a car accident, and the American government under Obama and Biden would not investigate her death. This has got to be one of the best photojournalism pictures, because behind her was Hillary, and the way he's positioned the camera, it just comes out with liar, which is true. How can you tell when a Democrat is lying? Their lips move. And when they die, they lie still. And here are Christians in Syria praying in a church that's been vandalized by ISIS. This is a Flemish father, this is a Belgian missionary who lives in Syria, who's been a witness to the Syrian war. The idea that a popular uprising took place against President Assad is completely false. The Americans and allies want to completely ruin the country. Do you not know that the media coverage in Syria is the biggest media lie of our time? Do you think that Syrian people are stupid? Do you think these people are forced to cheer for Assad and Putin? If President Trump practices geopolitics the way he's promised to do, then the future looks bright. Then it'll become similar to Putin's approach, and hopefully there'll be a solution for Syria in peaceful return. The Christians in Syria love President Assad. And the Muslim jihadists hate him. And here he is with his wife visiting the Christians in different places and ministering. You can see here, is there any fear? The wife of President Assad. And here he and his wife are. And if, now, where's the security? Where's this protection? Where's the fear? Are these people oppressed? It doesn't seem so to me. And here, I don't know, can you manufacture this sort of thing? This is support for Assad from the people who have been bombed and sanctioned and targeted for destruction by America and Britain and all these other countries around, with only Russia supporting them. And Russia came in to help them because they're also Orthodox Christians and they felt an obligation to protect Orthodox Christians from overwhelming persecution. So just another perspective in Syria, but this is just one other example of interference, in this case done by Biden and Obama. The fact is millions of Christians have suffered and died under communist dictatorships and radical Islamic jihadist regimes and terrorist movements as a result of US foreign policy, particularly under Carter and Clinton and Obama, that has routinely betrayed pro-Western allies and supported, funded, and armed anti-Christian regimes, such as the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Egypt was described as America's most important Arab ally in the Middle East, a force and stability in the Middle East. And yet, Obama went berserk on betraying the stable American ally of Egypt, and a wave of church burning took place under the Muslim Brotherhood, which Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State for the US, declared a force for peace and moderation. Churches that had stood for centuries or a millennium destroyed by Muslim Brotherhood just in 2013. And if it wasn't for the Egyptian military stepping in and kicking out these criminals, and then Obama put sanctions on Egypt once they got rid of these radical Muslims who were destroying and beheading Christians all over the place. How many people's lives have to be destroyed? Tens of millions of people lost their homes, lost everything, and have fled, and that's a ripple effect throughout Europe of regimes overthrown in Libya, Egypt, and Syria, which has caused the tsunami of Muslim refugees pouring into Europe right now. There's blood on the hands of people like Biden, Clinton, and Obama. And I reminded you last week, in the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, these are some of our brothers and sisters in Christ targeted and killed by terrorists in Egypt. And so this is a message from Egyptian Christians. Stop the terror and bloodshed of Egyptian Christians. End Christian persecution in Egypt. Stop Christian genocide in Egypt. Stop the killing of innocent Christians in Egypt now. Do you know that a Copt is an Egyptian? Coptic is Egyptian. The Coptic language is the Egyptian language. Copts are now only 12% of the population in what used to be Egypt, Coptic. But they've been colonized by the Arabs. Arabic is the language of Saudi Arabia. The Arabs now predominate, and they have become a minority. The Copts have become a minority in their own country. But a Copt is an Egyptian. Arab is a colonizer. Over 40 years ago, the country I grew up in, Rhodesia, was betrayed in the hands of communist mass murderer Robert Mugabe and his Marxist ZANU-PF terrorist organization by Jimmy Carter's administration. Robert Mugabe is remembered as the Marxist who was propelled into power by Jimmy Carter's State Department and the British Foreign Office in violation of the Lancaster House Agreement of 1979. Lord Arthur Christopher Soames, son-in-law of Winston Churchill, British-appointed governor of Rhodesia during the transitional period, was responsible to ensure a free and fair election in accordance with the Lancaster House Agreement. And in accordance with this, if there was sanction, if there was terrorism, intimidation, anything irregular, the votes for that party that caused it would be discounted in that area where this occurred. All soldiers had to be confined to barracks. This is just reminding you of who the Lord Soames's father-in-law was. But while Lord Soames acknowledged that Mugabe's ZANU-PF was involved in widespread, systematic violations and terrorism, intimidating the voters, he refused to dismiss the obviously fraudulent votes in favor of Mugabe. So if, for example, you've got a race in the Olympics and one of the contestants is shooting, stabbing, tripping, hacking to death, beheading people on the way up there, and he passes the line first, does he get to wear the gold medal and stand on the number one block there while his national anthem is played? No, because he's broken the rules. In fact, he's committed crimes. He should be arrested and prosecuted. But instead, Lord Soames decided, give him the gold medal. Despite the fact that Mugabe's people had been murdering missionaries, Red Cross officials, bayoneting babies, burning Christians to death in churches, hacking of people's ears, lips. They all signed all this. Robert Mugabe and Joshua Nkomo, Lord Carrington, British Foreign Secretary, authorized all this, and Lord Soames was under Lord Carrington. But they just, in blatant violation of the Lancaster House Agreement, Soames handed over the government of Rhodesia to Mugabe and his disqualified terrorist movement with disastrous consequences for all. Most were shot in the back in front of their family and fellow members in public executions after being forced to dig their own graves. And while American voters got rid of Jimmy Carter over 40 years ago, the long-suffering people of Zimbabwe are still stuck with Carter's foreign policy legacy. The breadbasket of Rhodesia became the Zimbabwe basket case. And while Rhodesia used to export food, Zimbabwe needs millions of tons of relief aid every year to survive. More than half of the total population of Zimbabwe fled the country in a vote of no confidence in liberation. With over 90% of the population unemployed, with skyrocketing inflation, everyone in Zimbabwe is suffering worse than ever before in history. But as Zimbabwe election observers have noted, the British Foreign Office and the United States State Department taught Mugabe and other dictators in Africa an important lesson. It doesn't matter how much they lied and cheated and intimidated and terrorized and murdered, or how many opposition candidates were beaten up, assassinated, or how many of their supporters were blown up in buses and trucks en route to the electoral polls. As long as Mugabe could claim that he'd won the election, he'd be accepted and respected as a member of the United Nations, and he could address the UN Assembly and the African Union and receive standing ovations in the African Union and continue to receive foreign aid, including from South Africa, under Mbeki in particular. Allowing voter fraud in Zimbabwe in 1980 has continued to have a catastrophic consequence with deadly results for millions of Zimbabweans ever since. And if America tolerates voter fraud now, that's the end of law and a republic in America. You cannot tolerate violations of the law, especially not when it comes to elections. If you tolerate that, if a dictator or terrorist gets to power through fraud and terrorism, how's he going to stay in power? By more fraud and terrorism. If you reward fraud and terrorism, or rioting and looting, you'll get more. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. And by the way, newspaper headlines can be deceiving. For those who don't know, this is the results in the elections in America. Was this 1948? Dewey defeats Truman. Well, actually, you probably don't know who Dewey is because Dewey didn't defeat Truman. And this is Truman here, and Truman became America's president there. He was FDR's successor. How many of you remember this in November 2000? President Gore, Florida pushes Gore over the top with bare majority. Remember this one? Huh? There was President Gore? Well, for a few moments, he thought so. This was the headlines in Cape Town on November the 9th, 2016. I remember seeing on the lamppost as I drove down Milner Road on the day of the elections, Hillary wins. And, well, not actually. Newsweek were a little presumptuous and premature in this cover commemorative edition on Madam President. But, you know, it might turn out like that with Biden too. And by the way, here's a Christian voter guide that where do they stand, the two candidates, on the murder of babies, on voluntary prayer in schools, on trans choice for kids, or funding of abortions, or law and order, or sexualizing children, or right to bear arms, or defunding police, or open borders. Very interesting. I mean, this is a voter's guide that some group has put out in America. I find this intriguing, that even the apolitical Amish have registered to vote and travel to vote now. These are the people who live in the 19th century. No technology, no electricity. The Amish in Pennsylvania, in Lancaster County, they registered to vote in 2016. They voted in droves, and they tipped Pennsylvania from being a Democrat state to being a Republican state because they realized if we don't, we're going to get more and more taxes, and they're going to be taking our farms. And by the way, this is meant to be the rallies of people who didn't vote for the president. They just turned out here to look at Donald Trump, but they weren't supporting him. Even though you see them all wearing these red MAGA hats, Make America Great hats. There's a lot of red hats there. And there's a lot of people turned out to Donald Trump. He turned out to places where I think more than the population of that city or state or town turned out. So the popularity of Donald Trump on the ground with the middle class working people is just huge. So common sense people are never going to believe that this guy beat this guy. And as some people said, not my pedophile. I mean, Biden is a creepy character. He's always sniffing girls' hair and, fingers all over them. General George Patton said, politicians are the lowest form of life on earth. Liberal Democrats are the lowest form of politicians. Just to bring another perspective in here, this was shared by a friend of mine in America who's reformed, and he said, he's so delighted at those people who keep their principles by not voting for Donald Trump, but by voting for a third-party candidate as a protest vote. So notice here, this is this chap state where at this stage there were only 90% reported, but 49.3% for Biden, 49.1% for Donald Trump. But notice the Constitutional Party had 0.2%, which would have bumped Trump up. And for that matter, the Libertarian vote, 1.1%, would have also bounced him way over Joseph Biden. So the protest votes alone equaled more than it can make a difference. And I know a lot of people in America who say, well, I hope and pray Donald Trump wins. I certainly don't want Biden to win, but on principle, I can't vote for Donald Trump because he's not a Christian or he's not my kind of Christian or he's divorced, and they come out with some personal problems why they can't vote for him. And they're going to make a protest vote for a party that can't make a difference. But in so doing, as you can see here, it could make the difference between a win or a lose for a pro-life candidate. Just thinking pro-life alone, there's a lot of other issues out there. The government sells fear so they can become your savior. Christ says, fear not, because he is the savior. We are not to accept the government's message of fear. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power of love and of a sound mind. I believe the heart of this problem is education. The state indoctrination gulags are producing the mindless drones and zombies who are voting for brain-dead candidates and pedophiles and baby killers like Biden who support international terrorism. How can this happen? How can normally intelligent people do this? Well, if you've been sentenced to 12 years in a state indoctrination gulag, you will be brain damaged by the time you come out of it. And if you watch Hollywood movies, you're going to be even more brain damaged. If you listen to the kind of rock, rap, hip-hop, and I don't know what other death metal they've got out there, you'll be even more brain damaged. But if you listen to the Clinton News Network and the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation and the Satanic Altar Television and read Slime Magazine, Useless News and World Report, how on earth will you even know what's going on? And so education, entertainment, news media, I think, are the key parts. This shows you a key part of the problem here. You've got a bunch of people. This is during Halloween, by the way. Keep God out of California. Well, if you want to know why California's got problems, considering they're sitting on the San Andreas Fault and that it just would take God to move a finger and they could all end up in the sea and Arizona could have beachfront property, I'd be a little bit more careful about angering God if I lived in California. What's at the heart of a lot of these problems? We've got a bunch of people who think they're so clever and so powerful and so brave, who are screaming for politically correct slogans, and they're demanding that government restrict, and big tech, restrict the rights and expressions and opinions of others. And you know, the big tech and the big business and the big government love that. And these people think that they actually are so brave, but they're not. How brave is it to be pro-LGBTQ, RS, socialist, defund the police, BLM, Antifa, gender confusion? Does that need courage? No, you just get applause. What you need courage for is to be traditional, raise children, build a large family, be pro-life. That takes courage. There's two different religions with two different ideas of sin. Traditionally, Christianity has seen the seven deadly sins as envy, greed, lust, gluttony, wrath, pride, and sloth. And these things are condemned, particularly in the book of Proverbs. But according to the cultural Marxist critical race theory, Frankfurt School, sexism, racism, homophobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and intolerance are the worst sins. Now notice, you won't find any of these words in the Bible. But these unbiblical definitions of sin now predominate most people's minds as sin, and there's a whole lot of churches that are also preaching like that. And Hunter shocked us all on Wednesday, that's just yesterday, with a video from American Gospel, this is the second edition of it, where you've got a whole lot of these speakers who are actually preaching this. They're preaching what's on the right-hand side of the screen here in pulpits claiming that's Christianity. They've accepted the Marxist critical race theory, the whole Freudian nonsense. They've accepted the Gramsci strategy, and they don't realize they've taken Bible words and gospel words and filled them now with Marxist content. And this is Antonio Gramsci, founder of the Italian Communist Party, who said the civilized world has been thoroughly saturated by Christianity for 2,000 years. Any country grounded in Judeo-Christian values cannot be overthrown until those roots are cut. But to cut the roots, to change culture, a long march to the institutions of education, government, religion is necessary. Only then will power fall to laps like unripened fruit. And so he spoke about the importance of being cultural termites to rot out the, if you look at the wooden pillars here, imagine a termite burrowing through the inner parts of the wooden pillars that hold up the roof. You can put new coats of paint on, but one day the whole structure is going to collapse if the insides of the pillars that hold up the society are eroded. And the pillars identified as education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, political institutions. That's cultural Marxism. In my book, Biblical Principles for Africa, I divided between what the Word of God leads to and what the philosophy of man leads to. And inevitably, you can see, if you follow the biblical principles, God-centered, Bible-based, then you will have home-based education, moral education, based on creation, Ten Commandments, Christian values, family values, and it'll result in pro-life, pro-family, pro-freedom, freedom of worship, freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, freedom of association, republican form of government, less government, more responsibility, family, church, and state, decentralization. That's biblical. But if you start with man, and you follow through man-centered philosophy and the Renaissance, and you'll end up with state education, secular education, evolutionism, everything from feminism, hedonism, alternative lifestyles, and you'll end up with whether the Eastern or Western versions of socialism, but it'll mean more centralized control, more government, less responsibility, less freedom, more crime, less freedom, more taxes, and so on. This is inevitable. It's a great divide. It's a world war of worldviews. Just take how people react to different diseases. It doesn't matter about all the other diseases out there and what's the biggest cause of death, but the moment it comes to corona, please take all my rights away. Where does this come from? Well, if you watch the nightly news offered by the secular humanists, this is a very clever sign. COVID-19, and somebody's written on 84 in red afterwards. That's what we're dealing with. This is COVID-1984. George Orwell called it right. This is nothing to do with disease, health, or, like, governments don't care about your health. Governments care about power, corruption. If they cared about our health, they would do something against corruption or farm murders or crime. Don't confuse the truth with the opinion of the majority, which is only corralled and shepherded by mass media hysteria anyway. Now, here's a few interesting quotes to sort of round us up before we go to open questions. Just because you don't take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you. I hear a lot of people saying, I'm not interested in politics. Well, I'm not interested in politics either, personally. But politics is super interesting to me, and they tell me how much money they want to take away from me. And even if I want to go and buy Bibles, they want to take a whole lot of money from designated money, consecrated to God, dedicated for Bibles for Sudan, saying, but they want 15% of it. They don't have a right to that. And who gave them that right? And, well, while we were sleeping, they were taking away our rights, and they now want to tell us what our children and grandchildren can do and must teach and must learn. And now they want to tell us who can work, when they can work, where you can work, how you can work, that you've got to wear masks, etc., etc. You can't sing in church. Those who are able to see beyond the shadows and lies of their culture will never be understood, let alone believed, by the masses. If you thought we're in a new situation now, this is Plato talking back in the 4th century BC. Cicero, over 2,000 years ago, said the budget should be balanced, the treasury should be refilled, public debt should be reduced, the assistance of foreign land should be curtailed, lest Rome become bankrupt. People must learn again to work instead of living on public assistance. Wow. They had that problem 2,000 years ago? Frederick Bastiat said, government is the great fiction through which everyone endeavors to live at the expense of everyone else. Well, who's going to pay for it? There's no free lunch at the end of the day. Voltaire said, in general, the art of government consists in taking as much money as possible from one party's citizens to give to the other. Talk is cheap. Except when the government does it. And it's very expensive. And you're going to pay for it too. The art of government is the organization of idolatry. The bureaucracy consists of functionaries. The aristocracy of idols, of democracy, the idolaters. The populace cannot understand the bureaucracy. It can only worship the national idols. Interesting. There's a word for this. It's called statism. The idolatrous worship of the state. The state must save you. Trust in the government. Cyril knows what he's doing. It's easier to fool people than to convince them that they've been fooled. Mark Twain's hitting something there. It's so easy to deceive people. It's so hard to convince them that they've been deceived. Suppose you were a member of Congress, and suppose you were an idiot. Better repeat myself, says Mark Twain. Giving money and power to government is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys. I don't know how many of you have heard of Ayn Rand, she's a major advocate against socialism. There's no difference between communism and socialism, she said, except in a means of achieving the same ultimate end. Communism proposes to enslave men by force, socialism by vote. It merely is the difference between murder and suicide. In that sense, people who vote for the ANC, EFF, or the Democratic Party of America are committing electoral suicide. A businessman cannot force you to buy his product, and if he makes a mistake, he suffers the consequences. If he fails, he takes the loss. A bureaucrat forces you to obey his decisions whether you agree with them or not. If he makes a mistake, you suffer the consequences. If he fails, he passes the loss on to you in the form of heavier taxes. And we have seen that. Take Viktor Orban, who's the Prime Minister of Hungary. He said, where many immigrants have settled in Europe, crime has immediately increased. There are many more robberies, harassments, and violence. That's a thought crime. How dare you think that? The EU is very angry with them. John Calvin pointed out nearly 500 years ago that when God wants to judge a nation, he gives them wicked rulers. This is the most unpopular reform teaching. People get the governments they deserve. If you're willing to tolerate a wicked, evil, corrupt government, you deserve it, basically. John Adams, America's second president, said, in my many years, I've come to the conclusion that one useless man is a shame, two is a law firm, and three or more is a Congress. Thomas Jefferson, America's third president, said, experience has shown that even under the best forms of government, those entrusted with power have in time, by slow operations, perverted it into tyranny. A government big enough to give you everything you want is strong enough to take away everything you have. We don't want big government. We want small, decentralized government. Liberty once lost is lost forever, said John Adams. I think he's the least remembered founding father of America, but people should listen again to what he had to say. To the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, Jesus said, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. This teaches that all civil authority is delegated by God and it's answerable to God. Our Lord taught that civil servants should be public servants. The kings of the Gentiles lorded over them. And those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest amongst you should be like the youngest, the one who rules like the one who serves. This is why, in the past, we had prime ministers, which means the first servant, and cabinet ministers, which means, in fact, the words there is deacon. Romans 13 states as the deacon of God, the servant of God. I would get letters from cabinet ministers signed, your humble servant. I don't know that they've been humble or servants for a long time, but that's the ideal, and it comes from Luke 22. The Bible is very clear that God has instituted civil government as an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Civil government is called the minister of God's justice to punish those who do wrong. That's the first primary and main duty of government. The primary duties and responsibilities of civil government are the protection of law-abiding citizens and the punishment of law-breaking criminals. Psalm 101 reminds us that the duty of God-honoring rulers is to destroy the wicked, to root out evil, to protect the law-abiding. As power corrupts, it is wise to limit and divide the powers of civil government, a system of checks and balances. I don't know how many people realize that the Palace of Westminster includes the House of Commons and the House of Lords. The upper house, appointed, and hereditary. The lower house, elected. And there is a road between the Minister of Justice, who bears a sword, and the Minister of Grace, as the keys of the kingdom. And so you've got Westminster Abbey and the Palace of Westminster opposite, but there's a road between. They're meant to be mutually supportive, but distinct, but both are under God. Minister of Grace, Minister of Justice, lower house, the green seats are the House of Commons, red seats, House of Lords. By the way, notice, what's the portraits on the wall? Moses receiving the law on Mount Sinai and Ezra reading the law to the people in the temple. That's the wall hangings to remind the people in the House of Lords the gold standard for all law. But the ultimate example of decentralization is Switzerland. When any country has a plus on its flag, it's a very positive sign. They are decentralized. All power is down on the local canton level. This is the freest country in the world and the oldest republic in the world. And they are decentralized. And this is a model that I think we should emulate. In order to be successful, a society needs to be made up of honest citizens who will not steal, and diligent workers who are hardworking and productive, and compassionate families who are concerned for their neighbors, and responsible workers who will fulfill their obligations to be faithful stewards of public resources. For nations to be strong, their families need to be strong. For governments to be good, the citizens need to be good. True freedom comes from within. The foundations for a truly free and prosperous nation can only be laid in characters, minds, and lives changed by the grace of God. And that's why we must smash cultural Marxism, which is communism that comes in the disguise of religion or culture or whatever, but it's deadly. It's designed to kill us and destroy all our freedoms. Now, we've written on these sort of issues, false flags, subversion campaigns, failure of atheism, triumph of faith in Russia, rise of the KGB and the Pink Inquisition. You can get these magazines down below. And in the bookshop, books like The Culture-Wise Family. Ted Baer and Pat Boone have analyzed films and the influence of the entertainment industry on our lives and how we need to learn to discern and to clean the screen and know before we go and be selective and not to support the bad but support the good. Your personnel is your policy. And Coleridge Ministries analyzed the Obama White House radicals, including Biden, who had a hand in the betraying of Rhodesia, by the way, back in 1979, 1980. And it's important to know the people on the other side. One of the most explosive exposés ever was the Obama administration's role in rewarding those who bankrupted America and cost tens of millions of people their jobs, their homes, and their savings, stole trillions of dollars from the world's economy, enriched the bankers, and Obama's administration came to power as a direct result of the October surprise, October 2008, with the worthless derivatives and all the other bubbles created by these banksters imploded, and it's a fact that in a bad economy, the incumbent president loses, or in this case, it was the end of George Bush's 8 years in the presidency, but his party lost. And Obama came to power largely because of the 2008 October surprise, they called it, economic collapse in America. But this is a very serious documentary where they have heads of states and ministers of finance everywhere from Singapore to Norway and Britain and so on, Iceland, they jailed all the bankers and they jailed all the politicians for their part in this, by the way. In America, they rewarded all the banksters who had impoverished the people and passed on the trillions of dollars lost to the taxpayers. And the people who are responsible were able to walk away with hundreds of millions or billions of personal wealth while their companies were declared bankrupt and the taxpayer to bail them out. And Obama promised to deal with them. Well, he rewarded all those banksters, Goldman Sachs and all that, with big positions in his cabinet. He said the Obama administration was the most Wall Street-dominated administration in American history. That's fascinating. And we've got it in our video library downstairs. There's a lot of books that would help one to understand communism, which, let's face it, is behind the socialism that Biden and the socialists are dealing with. What you have seen in the media right now is the most extreme example I've ever seen, but there's been a lot of deception in the media for a long time. The propaganda that you see right now, the campaign against Trump in the last few years has been unbelievable. But we've seen it happen to Rhodesia, South Africa before. So these are just some of the weapons and tools that are available that we can use, available on frontlinemissionsa.org. In being able to counter these issues.